So yeah, each dog is a complete individual. So
it's a mistake to say these are rigids to agree to everything.
Yeah, but unfortunately, if you go on the web, you're going to see that, right? The trainers who say, "Give me 5 days, I can train your dog." And because we're a nation of people who really want fast fixes for things, people believe that. And so what you get are some really quick fixes that don't last very long. They don't have a lot of staying power. Now, having said that, there are some dogs that are easily trained that retain it and that are just absolute miracles. And anybody here had one of those dogs? Like the, "Oh my God, I'm such a good trainer. I trained this dog," and you don't realize it was the dog. That it wasn't you being a good trainer, it was the dog being easily trained and being naturally good. And I think when I was really young, I had a few of those. I never understood why people thought that Malamutes were difficult. Ever, because I had a Malamute. He was an intact male for his entire life. He did have some escape issues. But by and large, he was a wonderful dog. He never got into a fight in his life. He never had any kinds of problems. And they're normally perceived as really kind of rough, tough, over-the-top dogs, and he wasn't like that at all. And so I figured that I was a really good trainer, you know, and then I got another dog and found out that I wasn't really a good trainer. All it usually takes is that second dog. So that's the other thing, that when you're trying to train, the time constraints and whatnot, when you're trying to train a dog, is that... Now, if you're training one dog, it's not very difficult. It's relatively easy. But if you get a second dog, all of a sudden it gets exponentially more difficult to train a dog to do something because they start doing things together. So I think I even mentioned it when Aspen was not nearly the barker that she is now. Before we got Flaca, the Chihuahua, and then Heather. And every night, Heather races outside to go catch whatever varmint might be there, and Aspen just follows her lickety-split, barking like crazy. And this is the most fun this is so much fun, apparently. You know, because they all stand at the door going, "I'm ready to roll." So now we have a whole process of getting out the door that I never used to have before, because I didn't have this whole barking thing going on before. But it was Aspen, but it's actually Heather, who's a good little girl, she was the one who sparked that. So does that answer your question a little bit? Probably not, huh?
I was wondering, like, I think you said, if, you know, if by a year, if the X is a fit.
Oh, you have certain, you have certain time constraints with regard to puppies that, you know, the first socialization period ends, and then you start with the neural synapses are closing. And now you have a problem with trying to get to the next step and the next step and the next step. And so there are certain constraints on learning that are the same kind of constraints that we have. I did a lab, Labrador Retriever Rescue, yesterday. It comes from there. And I asked, how many of you, you're all adults, right? How many of you have learned a brand new skill in the last year? Yeah? What?
Front cross and agility.
Okay, so you did agility before. So there's a front cross and agility. This is a brand new thing, but it's still part of agility. So it's part of what you've been doing. How about something like another language? You learned it, yeah?
Well,
no, programming. Yeah. Oh, HTML or something like that, right, yeah. So I've tried learning that. I can't learn that. Or if I could, it's going to take me a long time. But as an adult, it takes you way longer to learn it. Now, if you're a techie and you're learning something like HTML or something like that, you actually have kind of a leg up already. But for most of us, when you become an adult, I've read a report saying that you have learned like 90% of what you are going to learn by the time you're 17 years old. And then after that, it's just way harder to start learning. So the same thing is true with animals, with dogs. No, she's just whining. She says there's somebody out there.
What's the time period for puppies then?
Well, we're going to talk about that right now. That's okay. That's the topic we're getting into.
Thank you.
Hi.
Okay, so dogs grow through what are called growth periods. during, you know, on their way to becoming becoming adult dogs. And so this is, so these are things that are pretty important. And again, when we get to videos, which we will pretty quickly, I will turn off the light so you can see them. But I like to start off in the day in the bright if we can. Oh, that's so cute. She's a lump, isn't she?
Yeah.
Her tongue is way too long for her body.
Yeah.
She can sit right here and her tongue can go like that, like a frog's tongue, all the way out there. So dogs go through a lot of different periods in their growth. First of all, we're not going to talk very much about neonatal periods, which is birth to 8 weeks, because it's something that is very interesting, but unless you get involved in raising a dam with puppies, it's probably not going to be that totally relevant to you. But during that time, let's suffice it to say that maternal behavior and the maternal experiences that are going on have a great deal to do with the puppy's experiences. So if, for instance, the mom dog is astray and really worried about her life in the future, then it is quite likely, and you know, just it's trying to make ends meet more or less, that stress, those stress hormones pass on to the puppy. So the puppies are a little bit more, or maybe a lot more, depending on the puppy himself or herself, likely to be stressed as when they're born. And I do have a horrible video which I'm going to show you, which you can see the differences in the puppy's behavior with a very stressed out mom. Between 8 and 20 weeks, the puppies actually, before that, probably between 5 weeks and 20 weeks, the puppies are little learning machines. They're really learning. First of all, they're learning all their motor skills. You know, they can't move very much when they're brand new pups. They just kind of, they're like little slugs. They're just trying to get to a tit. That's really about it. And, but then they start exploring very quickly. And at 5 weeks, they're really exploring. So that's when they need to have, and this is an important consideration if you have puppies, they absolutely should have different kinds of surfaces to explore. And what's going on now, what's happening now is that people are doing that. But up until, very recently, they didn't. People just put puppies on newspaper because newspaper was easy to clean up, and they just left it there. That's what, and so the puppies never had any kind of different exposure to different kinds of surfaces to walk on, which is one of the first things they learn how to do. So if you get a puppy, anybody here have, I know you guys do, a dog that was not very well socialized as far as you could tell? Okay, so one of the things that you might have seen would the puppies not wanting to go up and down stairs and looking like, oh my God. Or if you put the puppy on a wood floor, which is really slick, they don't want to go on it because it doesn't have it is not a surface that they're comfortable with. They think they're going to fall down. So those are all things that they have to have when they're pretty young, and in order to really learn how to kind of experience it and then think, okay, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't make much difference. So they play a lot. And one of the things we're talking about is singleton puppies, which have a huge deficit because guess what? Singletons can't play. They play with their mom if their mom is playful. She wasn't playful. All she wanted to do was eat their food. Well, she would throw it up for them, which was really nice. So she'd regurgitate it and then she'd eat it because she had it all confused about what they're supposed to regurgitate food and then let the puppies eat, but she'd regurgitate it, look at it, and go, I think I want this. Yeah, so, you know. Whereas Aspen's mom, this is why Aspen has problems. Aspen's mom would regurgitate the food, and then when the puppy'd come to eat it, she'd snark at it. You can't have it. She was a little bitch. So during these periods of time, during the whole use of the puppy, they go through what are called synthetization periods. These sensitization periods, which usually the one that we're really, really familiar with is at about 7 weeks. But there are others that occur for right around 5 months and then again later. And during those time, those are windows for quick learning. And the dogs appear to be very spooky. So at about 5-6 months, sometimes they just kind of like, something that was not a bother for them before suddenly becomes the most horrendous thing in the entire world. And it's like, oh my God, what is that? I don't think I'm really able to cope with this. This is really awful. So those are, you know, things that you have to be well aware of if you're dealing with puppies. But it's also important if you adopt dogs to be well aware of the sensitization period that they may or may not go through. Now, Scott and Fuller, who wrote the Bible of dogs, and who they're the people who went through all of these. They studied the sensitization periods and all that. They studied beagles, and they were studying beagles probably under the thought that beagles are representative of all other dogs, but they're not. So the sensitization periods that a beagle goes through might be very different from that of a Formosan mountain dog, you know, or a German shepherd or whatever. So from the point of view, our point of view as owners, just watching for these windows of sensitization is really important, because during that time, your dog is going to be like a nutcase. You know, they look at a fire hydrant and go, oh my God, I think it's going to eat me. And yesterday they passed it with no problem at all. So that's one of those things that you actually will see.
So you feel like that's a time period where stuff happens that's permanent, or it's more...
Well, it could be permanent. If your dog is traumatized during a sensitization period, that trauma stays with them forever. Trauma goes into the amygdala and hangs out there. And so, and actually, we'll probably talk about it a little bit later, but it's worthwhile mentioning now. Has anybody here ever been, like, had a really icky event happen to you? If you close your eyes, can you revisit that? Right? And I can't tell you what it might be, but you can close your eyes, you can relive it in its entirety. That's because it's carried in its entirety in a portion of the brain, in the hippocampus. And since it's carried there, if it's really hard to...
PTSD.
Oh dear, I've got issues today. Okay, PTSD. This is what PTSD is. It's lots of trauma, following the other, and the inability to get over the trauma. Even though you try to shove it into the back of your brain and all that kind of stuff, it doesn't work to do that. So trauma, and of course dogs don't try. You know, if they're going to relive trauma, they live. So if something happened, like somebody came at them with a broom during a sensitization period particularly, that could actually be seen as a traumatic event.
But if it's just like walking past a fire hydrant and freaking out.
And if you let them visit, they're going
to
be fine. They're going to get over it themselves. But if you yank them past it, they may have a bad memory of the fire hydrant. So that's something that is, again, we're going to come back to this because we're going to come back and we get into the emotions. But it's worthwhile mentioning here. So in adolescence, which starts at 20 weeks, so how many, that's 5 months, right? At 5 months of age, they start adolescence. And at that point, this is where you get what people think of as my dog is dominant. Because they're status seeking at this point. They're trying to figure out their place in the pack. Because every animal has to have a place in the grouping that they're with, whether it's human or dog, or human and dog, or human and cats and dogs, or whatever it might be. They are looking for their place in that grouping. And if you're a good owner, then the place is probably going to be down at the bottom and liking it. Right? That's kind of where you want your dogs to be, is so that they don't think that they can tell you what to do, but they really like being where they are. So, but right now you'll get status seeking, pushing, demanding behavior. This is when they start doing the barking for demand. You know, I want this, I want this, I want this. Lots of experimenting behaviors. So, you know, things that we hate. And that for some reason or other, people think dogs know that they're doing something wrong. Oh, he ate my piano leg. I know he knows that was wrong. Why? Because when I yelled at him, he looked like he was sorry. No, you yelled at him and he was sorry. He didn't know what the piano leg is supposed to look like. He's not a carpenter. He's a dog, and he's going to use his teeth to chew on things in order to find out what they taste like or what they feel like on his jaws. And maybe whether, you know, those are things that they're going to want to do. So destruction is part of the adolescence. So I got an email today from somebody that has a dog with separation anxiety. It's a Vizsla. No, a Weimaraner. There are three breeds of dogs that have separation anxiety more than any others. Vizsla, Weimaraner, and German Shepherd. Those are the three I see more than any other. And this is a Weimaraner. And he said that his dog goes crazy when he greets him, when he comes home. The protocols that we've been working on are working, which is really nice. But are you all smooshed? Now you're all white.
Good thing you're reflecting.
Yeah. So the protocols are working, but when he comes home, the dog goes completely ballistic when he greets him, just over the top ballistic, and rams into him and gets really excited and over, you know. And he said his daycare provider says that this won't go away on its own, so she wants him to use a choke chain and start to work on the behavior. So I wrote to them what I think might be a better way, and they're in Sacramento, so I can't go see them. But the fact is that he said he was assuming the dog would grow out of it to a certain extent. And I said, yeah, the dog will grow out of it. As the separation anxiety drops down and he becomes a little bit more stable, then all that extraordinary emotional response when somebody comes home is going to start to drop. And he'll be better. But you can help him. Youngsters will practice aggression. They're not very good at it. So they don't quite, I wouldn't say they miss, but they don't know how to use their teeth really very well. As they get older, they get much better at doing that. And they have a lot of energy. And that's really true. Adolescents have a lot of energy. And you keep on going. I always said, when I had my kid, I noticed this. Many people want children, and many people want dogs. And then they're happiest when they're sleeping. Yeah. Because we like the idea of it, but the practicality of it sometimes is a wee bit much. They will practice stalking and killing. That's part of their play behaviors. If a dog is anxious as a puppy, they'll be anxious as an adolescent. Because that's the kind of thing that doesn't go away. The behaviors will mature. So instead of just running away and going underneath something, the dog might snap. So anxiety is one of those things that you have to address. If you don't address it, you're probably going to be really sorry. It needs to be done.
You can't ever rule them to reduce
it. Oh yeah, you can. But if you're just assuming that it's going to go away because they grow up, then not going to happen. Because anxious dog puppies become anxious adults. And there are some puppies that are mature, overly mature, and overly aggressive or something, and that doesn't go away either. So
unless
yeah.
You work with them.
Yeah, unless you work with them. Well, sometimes, and sometimes not. We have our limitations.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other thing that about a lot of dog trainers, they say, I can fix anything. Yeah, I've only got a bunch of jails that are filled with people, because we're fixing those people. If we can't fix our own species, then why do we think we can fix another species? Because we're almighty? And not quite. Yeah?
Is anxiety at all genetic?
Oh, yeah. Totally genetic. Probably 90% genetic. Yeah. Yes?
I'm sorry, I missed the first word. What is it that's all genetic?
Pardon? Oh, is anxiety genetic? And yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Will you address how?
Eventually, because what we're talking about now, I mean, as we go on, I'll be talking about individuals that and what we've done to help it, but the full protocols, they don't come until later. So the idea is for this first 3 weeks, we're going to be just doing this. And then after that, if we can find some people to do consults with, then you'll actually see how protocols work, you know, what you can do, because it seems like it. I actually don't like protocols very much, and the reason, I mean, I'd have some, and some of them work really well, but each individual dog is so individual that it's kind of unfair to say, oh yes, we'll just do this, this, and this. At Marin Humane Society and other places now, what they do is they give out handouts for this kind of behavior, that, and I find those to be very frustrating because they don't cover the individual dog, and they need to cover the individual dog. So adults, a continuation of adolescent behavior if allowed or encouraged to progress, and we will talk a lot about adults. So puppyhood lasts, puppyhood and adolescence are really short, and I get calls from people who say, I have a 2-year-old puppy and I'm looking for training. This is not a puppy anymore. This is a dog in late adolescence. And, you know, on the verge of adulthood. But because we grow up so slowly, people think dogs kind of grow up slowly too. They forget that by the time a dog is 12 or 13 years old, they're old, you know. Yes, it is a terrible thing that dogs do not live as long as us. Wouldn't we like it if they lived as long as us? And you say this, and then you go, yeah, but if I didn't like the dog, we'd have to get a divorce. You know, what would happen? Anybody here had a problem dog that they actually, part of them was kind of happy that they died? You know, because they do die. And so for most of our dogs, we grieve. It's awful. But when Barney the Rottweiler died, I went, rest in peace. Thank you so much. You had a good life and I'm glad you're gone. So, you know, I don't know that we'd have, how many of you guys have a parrot? They live what? A parrot. They live like 130 years. Yeah. So if you get a parrot, you better be willing to have that parrot for your entire life. So,
and plus.
Yeah, and then you have to put in your will.
Yeah.
Because somebody else is going to have that parrot. Or a turtle, but hey, you know, here you can have my turtle. So, yeah, it's just that what happens is this really sped up maturing is outside of our, we don't understand it, that it takes such, they mature so quickly, that at the age of 4 months, the socialization window shuts. What do you mean it shuts? They're still a puppy. In fact, many people don't get their dogs until they are 4 months old, so, or until they're adults, and then they get a dog. Oh, and I get a lot of people who get adults at, you know, a 3 or 4 year old dog, and they call me and they go, okay, I want to socialize my dog. Sorry, that's over. That's over. Now, you may be socializing your adult dog, but it's in a different way than it would be if it was a puppy. You have to really realize that. So the first socialization window starts at 3 weeks when the puppies first respond to sound. They hear that, they can start their socialization window. That's when you need to start doing things like picking the puppy up and turning them over and blowing in their little mouths and doing things to them that are novel but are not invasive. So it's something. And one of the interesting things, I don't know if I wrote about it. Yes, I did. So I'll talk about it in a second. And then it ends at 12 weeks. So this first primary socialization period ends at 12 weeks. And that's when some dedicated receptors in the brain close down. So they're shut. They're shut. So if the puppy hasn't had the requisite exposure during that time, you can't get it back. So if the puppy was raised in a barn until he was 3 weeks old, and somebody just came in and threw food to the mom, and the mom, you know, just nursed the puppies and whatnot, those puppies already are going to have problems with novelty, with new things, with new people, new kinds of animals, because their experience in you know, might be the rats in the barn, and it might just be with maybe one person coming and feeding them. And if that person's a woman, then they're going to prefer women, and they're not going to prefer men. And if it's a child, they'll prefer children. And if it's an adult, they'll prefer adults. Because those are those first things that they're going to really have a lot of experience with. So they need a lot more than we think they need at a very, very early age. The second socialization window closes at 4 months, 16 weeks. Again, You're going to get, they need more exposure. So if you get the puppy at 12 weeks, you don't give up. You just have to realize that each time a window closes, you're going to probably have to put a little bit more effort into the socialization. And perhaps you might have to be a little bit more careful about it. So if I got a four-month-old pup and I hadn't had it before, instead of taking him to Starbucks, which is what we did with our five-week-old puppies, and maybe having a few people handle them, the pups, I might just have the puppy observe what's going on instead of actually getting that tactile whole thing. I remember when we took Aspen's litter, I'll get to in just a sec, we took Aspen's litter to a shopping center, and there was a whole bunch of bikers out in, and they're all at Pete's having coffee. And so there we were with our four little puppies, eeny, weeny, teeny, weeny, five-week-old little dogs, right? And we asked them if they wanted to handle the puppies. And they're like, oh, these great big guys. And they're like, I like this one. It's really cute. She's not afraid of anything. Yeah.
So on a, like a normal vaccine schedule, what are the restrictions on puppies' activities and where they can go and stuff?
So you mean like medically?
Yeah.
Well, anywhere they can go. They can go anywhere where they're not going to contact other dogs that you don't know. Okay, so, and that would, is specific to fecal material. But, I mean, there are some things that are carried by air. Although, if you're in an outdoor location, that generally isn't going to be a problem. It's mostly anything wet, anything poopy, and strange dogs. They can go through anything else. Anything, any place else is fine. So this is, in fact, the Veterinary Association of America, AVSAB, they actually came out with a paper saying, do socialize your puppies, but none of the vets seem to have actually read it. It's on my website. You can read it. It says, you know, yes, definitely socialize puppies. Just be careful. Just be careful about what you're doing. Yes?
I have a question about vaccination. I was told that the mom, the puppies are with the mom for a while, and they have her colostrum. So
they're getting some immunity.
Yeah. But then, sorry, I forget how it worked to me. But yeah, they don't have their mom colostrum.
After they're weaned, they lose the colostrum. The first, from what I understand, the first inoculation actually boosts their immune system. The second one drops it again, and the third one boosts it again. That's why they need the three, and if they're a certain breed, they need four. The current, there's a current controversy about it, which is along the lines of, we shouldn't be putting all these vaccinations in one shot, you know, and that's probably really true. And in fact, they certainly don't need something like leptospirosis until they're an adult. And only then, if they're going to go places where they all see, you know, wild animals scat, or they're going to go to ponds or whatever. So, yeah, it's a...
Mine did slip.
Pardon?
Mine did slip. Dakota's up. Split his shots up. She believes in the same thing as you, like, take him out as many places as you know he's going to be safe. But then I went in on a kind of modified shot schedule. She does this for all her puppies, not specifically for Dakota, but for the same reason that she just feels like, you know, it's kind of the same with kids. You wouldn't give them every single shot.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that. Well, people do, though. This is the Leonberger, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, I've worked with her for a long time. So, yeah, so I totally agree with her. And the big guys, they, again, they need, usually they need that fourth shot where some of the smaller ones don't. And like Rotties are really, really prone to parvo. And I know there are some other breeds that are very prone to parvo, so you want to be careful with that. Obviously, if you're taking your puppy to, you know, to a shelter to for classes, you have to be very much aware of what's going on inside the class. But we take our puppies out on trails all right away. And if there's anything we don't want them to get in, we just pick them up, you know. So they get a lot of that. 16 plus weeks, the brain growth continues, but it slows down through adolescence, which ends somewhere around a year and a half. less for some, more for others. So your Leon Berger's adolescence is probably going to end at about 3.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Labrador's adolescence ends very late. Cavalier King Charles Spaniels never get out of it. They're pretty much always they're an adolescent. But many of the other small dogs, like Chihuahuas, they get out of adolescence at just over a year. So they grow up early and then they live longer, which is kind of an interesting thing. So I just thought this was a fascinating piece of information. Wolves mature faster and begin to explore at 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, when they can smell but they cannot see and hear. So they use their noses more than our dogs use their noses, and our dogs use their noses an awful lot. By the time they can use their other senses at 4 weeks, they're starting to feel fear, and so they develop their first fear response quicker than dogs. So dogs don't explore until all of their senses are actually functioning. Now they can't see very well, but they can hear and they can smell. And they're, you know, so they're getting all this information, whereas wolves are only getting it through their nose, dogs are getting it through everything else. But the exploration period in puppy dogs lasts longer and flight distance is less developed. So at 4 to 5 weeks, wolves have a flight distance. And remember what we talked about with flight distance is that personal space thing they need, right? So at 4 to 5 weeks, if you go towards a wolf, the wolf will back up. At 4 to 5 weeks, if you go towards a puppy, they just look at you. They don't have that kind of self, that particular response until they're a little older. And then it depends on the amount of socialization and exposure that they get during that time. Okay. So remember what I said about the experiences of the mom? If she's traumatized, hey, Goofy. The experiences of the mom, if the mom has bad experiences, that comes through the stressors go through the bloodstream and that affects the puppies. Epigenetics also comes into play here, so the past experiences of the mom will have an impact on the puppies. This is a video of two litters of puppies. This was from years ago, but they both came into the Humane Society at the same time. They're both approximately 3 weeks old. One of them has a mom who is very social, and the other one, a mom who is very feral. And you'll see the difference in the puppy's behavior. And Yeah, you know where it is? Okay. It's still the best video of the kind that I've seen. I don't have any others that are this. All right. Let me know if I get in the way of this thing, okay? Okay, so your dog might get upset with this. Heather's
fur
never seen
it. Is the magic precious.
What you doing, Kim?
Playing with the babies, showing the difference in that. Showing how.
Oh my goodness, this is big. You're a little mega dog.
Summer bear.
Try cuddling and holding her neck just like we did with the other one. Hi, Mommy.
Mom, how are you?
We all say stupid things around puppies. Yes. So they're
That's
very
summer.
Cute.
This is summer? Oh, yes. They like being petted.
I love it.
Yeah,
this one coming at us. You know, walk up to you.
There's Mama.
Does that look like you? Does that look like a mama? Yeah. That looks like Daddy, actually.
Mommy, you like babies, huh?
Well, that
they look like
the
baby. They look like baby.
She's gonna lie down and go to sleep.
It's nice.
Good
to
mama.
Watch babies. No, you don't go out shopping. She's a really good girl.
Major difference.
Totally. And these puppies look like they're a little over 3 weeks.
Probably just about 3 weeks.
This is the other little.
Again,
they're stiff, they become hard.
Done, but we didn't do, and we would never have done it. Would take one of the other puppies and give that to that mom and trade a puppy for each of the litters, but we were not in the business of doing, of experimenting with the dogs, so we didn't do that. So, things that develop in our puppies. Assertive behavior develops first. Oddly enough, they get assertive because guess why? They're hunted. They're going to compete over milk. They're competing over the access to mama's milk. They also really like attention, and they may or may not be aggressive to other puppies. Now, Heather's litter, none of the puppies were aggressive to one another. Aspen's litter, I don't really think so, but one of the litters, I think maybe of our hound. The puppies were pretty aggressive to one another, and also one of our little feral moms. The puppies were pretty aggressive to one another. So they actually, they got into fights. Now, they're not going to hurt each other, so you don't, it's not like you stop them. But you can really see how they're developing from the very beginning. So this was the feral mama right here. She was very cute, but we couldn't touch her. It was very different. I mean, we'd eventually got to the point where we could touch her, but we always had to leave a harness on her, and we had to leave a leash on the harness or else she could get away. Her name was Deenie, short for Houdini, because she was pretty good at getting out. And here are her puppies. So did you see a dominance posture there? Yep, and then another one. And now they're getting pissed at each other. Look at those postures. Look at how stiff their little tails are. Yeah, they're like 5 weeks old. So one of the interesting things is how this changes. So there might be some status in litter of puppies where one pup is way more dominant than the other puppies, and the next day it might be a completely different pup. So there's an awful lot of fluctuation in the puppies, in the litters. I had a heck of a time telling which one was more dominant over the others. We probably should have put different colored ribbons on them, but we didn't do that. And they probably would have ripped them off each other anyway, because they probably would have had a good time doing that. There was an experiment that John Wright did. He's an applied animal behaviorist. I think he's in like South Carolina. No, he's in Raleigh, North Carolina. But anyway, it doesn't matter. So what they did is they took a litter of puppies, or they had two litters of puppies. One of the litters, they took the supposed alpha, the more dominant puppy, out of each of those litters and put it in with another litter. Okay, so they just took them and switched them. And what they found was those dominant puppies became the subordinate puppies in the new litter. So you can tell, you know, when you talk about dominance, you can really tell how it fluctuates from situation to situation, which is why it's very difficult to tell somebody, oh yeah, you have a dominant dog or you don't have a dominant dog. It fluctuates depending on what social circumstance the animal is in. Yeah?
Does that fluctuation tendency go through adulthood?
It always will, yeah. So say I've got a client and that client has a dog that is pushing her around. So in that case, you could call that dog dominant, right? And so whatever the dog wants, whenever he wants it, that's what he gets. And that's actually not that uncommon. We see, oh, he wants to go outside. Oh, he wants to do this. And because people tend to be pretty nurturing, they start to give in to the dog all the time. And the dog after a while kind of like, hey, I need this now, you know. So I've had a lot of clients where I say, okay, you're a really, really good servant, you know. And that definitely happens. But if you then change the relationship, so you just do some tweaks to the relationship, and they're pretty subtle tweaks in many cases, then that completely changes. So it's not what people think of as a dominance as a characteristic, but it's really something that's very fluid within a relationship. And that is true in adult dogs, and it's also true. Now, there are pushier dogs. There are some dogs that are going to try harder, and there are some dogs that don't. But it's still, you know, no matter what, those are still not probably, it's still a fluid kind of a characteristic or fluid situational thing.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay, foster puppies, maybe no, like now, but there was one litter of three, like Chihuahua terriers, and the way they would injure each other,
how old were they? They injured each other?
Yeah.
That's abnormal.
Okay. They would have little teeth, you know, they wouldn't get cute to stop.
Yeah, it's very abnormal for that. Yeah, and not that you don't get it, but this is not within the realm of normal.
What do you think causes that?
Genetics.
Okay.
You know, I think that human beings, we always think that we can change everything. And the genetics don't matter, but genetics matter an awful lot. Otherwise, we wouldn't have border collies that herded things.
Retrievers that retrieve things, you know, and pit bulls that fight things. So genetics matters a lot. So after aggression or assertive behavior comes deferential behaviors. And guess why that happens? It's because they get taught a lesson. So you get deferential behaviors following on top of the assertive behaviors. So the mom or other pups discipline, and then puppies learn to cry uncle. It's like, ow! You remember when you're taking a class and people say, oh, just squeal, and then the puppy will stop biting you? That doesn't work, by the way. But it does work in a litter, and there's a reason why it works in a litter. And the reason is because, well, you'll actually see it, but essentially the mom will make a noise, right? And then she'll either push the puppy away or she gives him a really quick little mouth bite. The mouth doesn't close on the puppies. So, but it doesn't feel good. And so the puppies learn that means something's going to happen. When they're playing with their other puppies, or occasionally they'll bite their mom and the mom will squeal and then go bite. But with the puppies, they'll play with the other puppies, and the puppies, they'll bite the other puppy, the puppy will squeal and then will bite them back. So that's why the squeal actually works. It's good learning theory. its consequence, the consequence of the of a bite is often that you get pushed away or you get bitten yourself, and that's why it works. But it doesn't work if you just squeal, because you don't ever provide a consequence. That makes sense? You're gonna squeal for your dog, for your puppy. It might work if they're under the age of 3 months. After the age of 3 months, they're just gonna go, oh, you're all sounding fury. This means nothing to me at all. What would work in something like that? Well, many things, you can try many things. I actually will growl at the puppy and I just kind of hold them out like this, depending on how big they are.
I was taught to, you know, go out if they bit, but I didn't know there was a problem.
There has to be a consequence that goes, yeah, after that. Yeah, it has to, you just can't go out, because a lot of times if you say ow, they go, oh my God, it squeaks. I think I'll make it happen again.
I stop whatever we're doing.
Yeah, if you do a timeout. Yeah, if you do a timeout, that's fine. But in a puppy, the timeout can't be more than about 20 seconds. Because they don't exactly have a long attention span. So if you put if you're doing a long timeout on a puppy, it's because you've reached the end of your rope.
I don't put up with anything in my car or anything on the trail. And it has to be a safe space for all the dogs. And they all have to be, sorry, I don't know if this is wrong, but they all have to be nice to each other.
No, that's fine. You can have, we have rules in our house. All the dogs have to be nice to each other. And if they're not, there's a consequence. So mom, you know, what puppies will do is they'll kind of generalize bigger dogs to their mom. That's because they're seeing so they think of adults as being very powerful. They mostly also will think of human beings as being powerful. So some of the things that happen when they learn deferential behavior is you get spontaneous urination, right? So they just suddenly will start peeing. The mom will flip them over, and then she starts licking them, and that causes them to urinate. That's why you get spontaneous urination. Is because that the mom does that to actually make them urinate. Flipping on their back, which displays the inguinal area. This is another thing mom does all the time. She just walk up to them, flip them over. You know, then she'll lick them, they urinate, and then everything is good. They'll squat, they'll raise a paw. That's so cute when they do that. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. They'll lick the lips of another dog. This is a behavior that would cause a mom dog to actually regurgitate her food. Because that's how they feed their puppies when the puppies don't have milk anymore. They eat meat or eat something and then they regurgitate it for the puppies to eat it. So isn't this a nice thought? When your puppy's licking your lips, he's expecting you to regurgitate. And eye contact avoidance, which is also very deferential. So if puppies are separated from their moms too early, they never learn deferential behavior. If there's only one puppy in a litter, they never learn deferential behavior. There are big bad things that happen to puppies that don't have litter mates. Yeah?
What is it that makes urination deferential? I mean, I realize that it is deferential, but how come?
Well, I think it's just an extension of the mom's behavior. So that what she would do, she's controlling them, and she makes them urinate, and so after a while they think that the urination is part of just the whole deferential thing. You know, this might be some other research on it that I'm not a bit, you know, I don't know anything about. Yeah.
How soon is too soon for the mom separation?
How soon is too soon for puppies to be separated from their moms? Well, I think anything before 6 weeks is too soon. And it's preferred by most people to actually wait till the end of the 7th week, because that's the end of the first fear period. Usually, sometimes, with some dogs. Again, you know, you never quite know. So, these are puppies that are, this is Aspen's litter. Isn't it cute? Yeah, so you can see why and there's Aspen's mom. Now, this is Aspen's mom, her name is Chanel. She's got a toy or a ball. And Aspen, she never treated Aspen very well. She treated her two brothers much better. Yeah, that poor little girl had to deal with that. So here we have them. Now she's got it. Now she's good. This is Aspen wants the ball, and blah. There's a correction. Chanel was a bad mom. Or not a really good mom. Aspen goes, okay. Look, aren't they adorable? They're like 4 weeks old. Here they are a little bit later, they're all cleaning up some food, and look at Mama's going to get after Aspen. So, but it didn't really bother her a lot. Her two brothers, by the way, one of them is like 22 pounds and one's 18 pounds. Aspen is 12 pounds. So she never got enough to eat. You know, poor little girl. Okay, so this is a different litter. This is, I think it's what we didn't keep the mom. But this is, these are five-week-old puppies meeting Luke. Now, Luke is our big dog, and we don't have the puppies meet. The moms usually don't like Luke. And so we don't have them meet Luke until they're about 4 or 5 weeks old. But you watch some of this deferential behavior that I'm talking about. And these are things that dog trainers, they call this, you know, submissive behavior. So, and we're just calling it deferential behavior because it really is that. So this is 5 weeks old. The puppies are just pretty oblivious. They're like, oh, this is, that's the mama right there. Looks like Aspen, doesn't it? Yeah. And the puppy's like, oh, you're just a big thing, aren't you? And looks like a girl. So these puppies have not learned their very well, not yet, but they will. Luke gets easily confused. Now there's Aspen. Aspen's trying to protect the puppy. She's a good aunt.
She went right up the stairs.
So Luke is our aggressive dog. There's Boo, who's like, oh my god, that's a puppy. See the two dogs? Two put the moms together? That's the mom. So you can see, we practically preach. We take them all the time. He's very confused. Okay, so now it's 6 weeks. This is 1 week later. And the difference in behavior is amazing. Look at this, the black puppy being submissive. Thank you.
You're looking, look at him looking away. Don't run a very good bark and the puppy run away. Oh. I'll go play with my brother. So that is, could you just see the spontaneousness of, I'm just going to flip over. This is what you need to be looking for. If you get a puppy, one of the things you really want to find out is that puppy deferential to human beings? You know, if you make it, if there's a noise, does it flip over? It's a good thing. A little bit of submission is a wonderful thing. And people don't realize it. Heather is extremely subordinate. She's just a peacemaker. She wants to make sure everything is good. Okay, so this is another one. This is one I showed yesterday. This is a hound mom correcting a puppy for trying to take her bone.
Can you see how low-key these things are? So, you know, when people say, "Sit," you say no to the dog. I mean, you just don't really have to do that. So, this is Jesse. Jesse was very feral. This is about as close as I can come to her. And her puppies were the noisiest puppies you've ever seen in your life. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Do they grow out of that, or will that kind of be?
Actually, it's a really good question. Do they grow out of that?
Yeah.
Not usually. Not unless the adult is an extremely deferential adult, in which case, as the puppy becomes an adolescent and adult, they may change places. But most of the time, if you have an adult dog and you bring a puppy in, their relationship is kind of set that way. And even if the mom is a really sweet mom, the adult dog is really sweet and would never be, you know, dominant over any other dog ever. They don't really seem to change it very much. Now, if it's two male dogs, yeah, they'll start changing at adolescence, particularly if you don't neuter them. But even if you do neuter them, they will a lot. Oh, I think this is the howler and the screamer. So these are two of Jesse's puppies. They have to figure out how to get down the stairs. I get it. I just put that in there because they were so noisy. In the shelter, we took them to Santa Cruz shelter to get adopted. And nobody thanked us because they're in the shelter screaming their heads off. You could hear them throughout the entire shelter. They weren't even unhappy. They were just like, ah, woo, ah! We had to make sure that whoever got them understood that these were going to be the noisiest dogs they'd ever been around. They really were. Okay, so yeah, puppy problems. Singleton pups and pups separated from their moms too soon have similar problems. They can't handle frustration. So they throw tantrums. And those tantrums can be pretty bad, and they get worse as they get older. They're not used to any kind of competition for food, so they can't handle that. Separated puppies are usually bottle fed till they're full, so they don't get that frustration of not being able to get to something. If you watch a mom, the puppies go off the nipples and find another nipple, and they go off that nipple, so they're constantly competing for food. And if they don't have that, then they don't understand that it's like millennials. or like the idea of millennials. That they never had to compete. Their moms were always telling them they were wonderful, and that if anything happened, they all, if they were in a contest, they all got the prize. And so they consequently, supposedly, they can't take frustration. I'm not sure how true that is, because I don't think anything about any generation is true. I grew up as a baby boomer, and look what we're doing as adults, as old people. Yeah. Anyway, they're often physically oversensitive since nobody's been pushing them around. So they don't like being touched. They don't like being handled. They're different. Can you see how difficult it is to deal with a singleton puppy? Just thinking in terms of raising the puppy as a human being.
What would be the time you introduce them to food blocks?
I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
What would be the ideal time to take them for walks after vaccination?
Take them for walks?
Or to help them
Group walks?
Yeah.
Well, we take our puppies starting at about 5 weeks.
Okay.
But they're not going with a bunch of other dogs they don't know. They're going with our dogs.
If they were singletons and know the dogs.
If they're a singleton puppy?
I'm getting a puppy in 6 months.
Uh-huh. Is it going to be is it going to be a singleton?
Well,
you don't know. Yeah, well, if it's not a singleton, don't worry about it too much. But if it's a singleton puppy, then if you know anybody that's got puppies of the same age or around the same age and you can have them together, that's a really good thing to do because it teaches competition. And I think that that's going to be really important. The group walk thing is not going to, they usually can't go on long group walks until they're 5 months old. And at that point, you're done with all that stuff. So the earlier you can get them with, so if you get a puppy, especially if you get a puppy too young, and you know anyone else who has a young puppy with a mom or with an adult dog that's good, you do what you can to try to socialize the puppy that way. Socialization is not what people think it is. Socialization really is something, it's exposure just over a period of time to things that can frustrate or otherwise cause character development. That's what we're trying to do with these dogs, is to develop their characters. We kind of talked about neotenization. The more wolfy a dog looks, the more adult-like they act. But what happens from this behavioral standpoint is that these really neotenized dogs, like the Cavaliers and whatnot, they develop those aggressive, assertive behaviors, the I want, I want, I want, and they don't usually do the submissive behaviors. So you'll see an awful lot of small dogs who don't know how to be submissive. They don't flip over really easily and all that. You would think they would, wouldn't you? But a lot of times they just are they just have that first step and not the second step. This does not hold true of terriers. Terriers are naturally small. Most of our other dogs that are really small tend to be neotenized. They're human. We did it on purpose. Terriers are they develop that way on their own.
So, socialization, people think of socialization as taking your dog to someplace where there are other dogs. That is not socialization. That is exposure to other dogs. It's not a bad thing, but it's not real socialization. Socialization is introducing your dog to the world it's going to live in a timeline that the dog can accept this world. So if you're somebody like us who we live in a suburb, we have a lot of open space walks around us, we have a very small, we live in a fairly small town. So what we do is we expose the dog to those things. We don't have to take the dog into San Francisco. We're not intending to live in San Francisco. So if wherever you expect the dog as an adult to live, you need to have the dog exposed to that stuff. And if you have a fairly shy puppy, which there are shy puppies, then you are very careful about how you expose that dog to that kind of stuff. Because if you're overexposed, then you might cause trauma. If you underexpose, then they're not going to be able to figure out what the heck is going on in their world. That makes sense? But it's something that, you know, you're already enlightened, you're already sitting here. It's the people who kind of say, well, I'm getting a doodle, it's being sent in from Washington State when it's 5.5 weeks old because the mom is you know, no longer nursing it. So what do I do? And I'm like, first of all, doodles are difficult to begin with, and now you've got a doodle that's under-socialized and underexposed to adults already, and probably to adult human beings. So these are things that you see, and if you're in the daycare business, you see it all the time. If you're a dog walker, you're going to see these unsocialized or under-socialized dogs, and it's just going to happen because we're stupid. Okay, so these are under-socialized puppies. This was a litter, I can't quite remember, but I think it was a litter that was found in a farm or something like that and then brought into us. And one of the interesting things here about this litter of under-socialized puppies is how the litter varies. So how many of you have ever seen a litter of puppies or tried to pick up a puppy out of a litter of puppies or whatever? You'll notice all the puppies are a little bit different. In every litter of puppies, there is kind of the mean, which is like the, you know, the puppies that are somewhat sensitive but pretty resilient, because you're always looking for resiliency. And then you have the really tough nuts over here and the really shy, sensitive ones over here. So you're going to get this in every single litter. In a nicely bred litter, you won't get it won't be like a huge bell curve. It won't be like that. It'll be like that. Right? So the only minor differences between all the puppies. But in accidental litters, or actually in litters that have a mom that might be unstable or a dad that might be unstable, you'll get a really well-defined bell curve. And usually the dogs on either end of that bell curve are not going to be good pet quality pups unless you're very, very good at handling dogs and you know that kind of stuff. So you're going to see the bell curve in this. So these are two nicely socialized pups. They appear to be nicely socialized pups. They all come from the same litter. But they are very social to people. They want to play. They want to interact. They want to play with toys. These are things that you look for in puppies, right? So these are this end of the bell curve, unfortunately. We would like them to be this right here, but they're down at this end.
Are there any more back there?
Okay. So now we're going to bring all the way to the other end.
The other ones are pretty.
So this puppy is pretty much frozen in space.
Tell you what.
So she
why don't you bring one of those out?
Because he's afraid to go burrow.
Yeah, I think so too.
Really terrible.
Very stiff. Very scared.
He did wag his tail a little bit.
There's two dogs playing. That's that noise. So this puppy really, again, deferential behaviors. You can see them, right? Drops down, probably peed a little bit. Yep, did pee a little bit. Now, watch when she sees the person. She or he.
Even Molly's going to be all right with this one. There's so many.
She's one of those babies.
I like this dog.
They really like that golden dog, though.
Whoops, person. She won't look at the person. Oh, dear. Okay. Does not want person. So you can talk from that. That's never been handled. So this one is actually the middle of the bell curve, unfortunately, you know. This one is down the other end. So we saw the two different normal, or, and then the one that will look at things. This is all one litter. And this one's looking for a place to hide.
Let him go back in the closet again.
You gotta just go towards him.
It's not small enough space.
Gonna walk all the way around on the wall.
Close the window
then. And find a hiding place.
Okay.
Okay. Interesting? Yeah. So these are puppies that are under-socialized. The three pups that were really, there was two puppies that were really good, two puppies that were middle of the road, and two that were pretty bad. And I believe we fostered out. We adopted out the two that were okay, and we fostered out the other four, and one of them didn't manage to come out of her shell. The others all did. So as an adult, what do you think you would see in these under-socialized puppies that were hiding and stuff like that? Yeah, you're probably gonna see the dogs get very territorial, connect with one person very strongly, maybe one family, but likely one person, and then become fearful and probably very territorial. So they might be fearfully aggressive and territorial. So a 16-week-old puppy is the canine equivalent of a 16-year-old human being in the amount of brain development that he or she has undergone. By the time a dog is a year old, the vast majority of the behavior patterns have been solidified and changes will require new neural pathways. Not that you can't make them, it's just that they're really hard to make. And people often think that they can socialize an adult dog that has been neglected its entire life. It's really hard to do that. There are some magic dogs that you can do it with. And so it's always worth a try, but it's really hard to do. So these two pictures, this is my dog, Joe Bear. This is when he was 3 months old. And that's when he was an adult. So, you know, and that was about a year of age. So he made an awful lot of, he did an awful lot of growing. He put on 10 pounds a month. It was like, boom, boom. His breeder, he said he's a great breeder. He bred for good temperaments, and Joe Bear had a lovely temperament. And he said whenever he sold a dog, they would fall for the puppies, and then he'd bring out an adult male and say, this is what they're going to look like, just to let you know. Because people see the little puppies, and they don't realize that, you know, within a year, you're going to have this really big dog. Okay, so when you hear people talk about socialization of an adult dog, and they're not talking about the same kind of learning that a puppy is going through, and the dog will not be able to learn as much nor as fast. So those are just important considerations. Again, it doesn't mean you don't do something. It just means that you go, ha, okay, so we have to be careful here, or whatever. All right, so we're going to take a break, and then we're going to go on to some pack societies, some societal stuff.